Yo, check this out. This is Fresh Fit out the China, man. With the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the Blunt Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is your boy, C-Murder.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfuckers.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Dizzy Ball.
Vice One.
Yo, this is DJ Reddy Brand.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is a show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records reveal that addition to rappers that are coming up, get them put on. We need the platform to fight the mainstream. This show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow up with it.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, graphics and shadow the time. Check out the archives and hundreds of shows. Buddy, you kind of you to do everything free to download the stream. Oh, yeah, we deserve the real.
Unstoppable, we be
revived
up, it's we represent. All them killers on the mic, and we should love to all your fans.
I'm a man-made guy, crazy knocking all you rappers off. It's underground society, it's UGS for life, dog. Hip-hop AD, representing for the legend. Rapping mumble rappers, so we ain't sitting on the hip. Two-pocket beats, dreaming, thank you for the bliss. It's the Murder Master Music Show. Free the homie gangster, bro. I see these rappers on the streets. I got my job about to blow. Stay up on that raw shit, uncut street shit.
Keep it
locked
forever, bitch, we coming in strong. I see you feeding for the show.
Hey yo, this is R-Ray the Rugged Man. I'm listening to Cynics the Sound, Cynics the of Murder Dog Magazine.
Hi, here is a Rugged Man. How are you?
How are you? Everything's okay.
Fine. At first, tell us about how it was to grow up in Long Island when you was a kid, or how you grew up, how you discovered hip-hop.
Well, Long Island was the conqueror of hip-hop. We were the best on the planet when I was a kid. There was nobody better than us. Nobody. We had all the greatest rappers, all the greatest producers from Long Island at that time, in 86, 87, 88, 89. We had everybody great. Rakim, Public Enemy. We were Prince Paul, EPMD. We were the kings. Biz Markie was out there. You know, Busta Rhymes was out there. We was all the best, you know. So I wanted to be like Rakim and Chuck D. I wanted to be one of them guys. Yeah. They was getting radio play, and they was from Long Island, and we were better than everybody, and influenced the whole planet. That little island influenced all the hip hop you hear after.
Do you remember the first track of hip hop you ever listened in your life?
Well, there was breakdance, and breakdance became very popular when I was a little kid.
It was electrofunk?
Like who?
Egyptian Lover.
Oh, Egyptian Lover. Yeah. No, I'm talking more like, you know, New York, Big City of Dreams, everything in New York, and, you know, Melly Mel. And,
yeah.
And there was
Fantasy
a song,
Tree, all that. Yeah.
There was a song in the breakdance era that wasn't rapping, but it was called 18, or 19. It was a song about Vietnam, and it caught my ear. You know, I always forget the guy's name. Like 1919, they took like a news clip about a boy that was 19 in Vietnam, and I always post it, but I never forget what the artist name was.
Okay. And when you first rap in, at what time? At what time you were first rapping?
Yeah, I was a little kid. I was
12 at this time.
I think, yeah. I was 11 years old.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, I was really bad. So 12, I guess I was more sucky. So a lot of times they had 12, because I was able to consider myself rapping at 12, you know?
Tell us about your first album that never released, The Night of the Bloody Apes. It reminds me about, at the same time, you got, in 94, you got Planet of the Apes of Deluxe Mob, if you remember this album.
Oh, mine was first. Yeah. I signed a Jive in 92.
Mm-hmm.
And the album was Night of the Bloody Apes in 92. We just worked on
92,
it.
Okay.
It was supposed to drop in 94
because
of all the complications and holdups. And, you know, it took a year and a half for all of that shit. And then I demanded to leave Jive Records. And, you know, Night of the Bloody Apes. Planet of the Apes is I don't know what you're talking about, but Planet of the Apes was a famous Hollywood movie. Night of the Bloody Apes is an obscure little cool Mexican horror film, you know, about wrestling and brain transplants, and it was was pretty great.
And it was your first, and it was like pre-hardcore rap, I think, like the title of the album. It was even at the center of Grave Diggers. On what rappers you?
Oh, I was before the Grave Diggers too. I was before that.
Yeah.
The only one that might have been is the guy on your shirt, a little Gangsta Nip,
he was
in Houston. And,
yeah, he's the godfather of hardcore rap.
But in the East Coast, I don't know nobody doing it before me on the East Coast.
I think it was Isham. Isham was the first.
He was in Detroit, right?
From Detroit.
What year was Isham?
Isham, it was in 89.
Yeah.
With his first album. So he influenced a lot of New York rappers.
Well, like Rap Diggas. A lot of us didn't know who he was at the time.
And then through
the years, when you get the computer and you get, you know, everything, and information's easier to get. Because the thing is, back in that time, if you weren't getting like radio play, or the reason we knew about Nip was because there was these crazy kids. They were down with Ghetto Boys, you know,
and the Ghetto Boys
had Rap-A-Lot's record and stuff like that.
Yeah,
he was writing rhymes for Bushwick Bill and all that stuff.
The Gangsta Nip write for Bushwick Bill. He write Chucky. He watched Chucky for
the Gangsta Nip. That's what I just said. Yeah.
Gangsta Nip, right? Watch Chucky for Bushwick. Yeah, it's Sinister of Melodom magazine. We got also Brother Lynch at this time. Brother Lynch in 6.
Yeah, where was he from?
It was from Sacktown, Sacramento. Brother Lynch Hung.
Yeah. Like I said, on the East Coast, I can't remember too many people doing it before me. You know?
And how it was to meet Biggie? I know this time he was known. He was just a dope MC from Brooklyn. So how it was to meet him and make the song with him?
Well, I did a few songs with Biggie, a couple of songs. You know, just the one. Yeah. One. I knew a couple songs. Did a couple joints with Big, and I knew Big for a long time. And then he passed away. You know, so I didn't think about, I know somebody. It wasn't like you knew somebody. It was like hanging out with your boys. You know, it wasn't like, I don't know how to explain it. You know, it's like hanging out with Killer Priest. You don't know these people are going to be considered these iconic figures in not just hip hop culture, pop culture. You didn't know that.
Yeah.
You didn't know that every single person ever is going to know who Biggie is. You didn't know that, you know? You didn't know that the President of the United States would know who Biggie is, you know? You didn't know that. It's just different. So I don't know. I think it's more strange that he became this untouchable figure, which was the big surprise, you know? Yeah.
And at this time, when you dropped his first album, he was even against labels.
Huh?
You were ever against label.
I was always.
Since the first album.
Yeah.
When you said every record label sucks dick and all that, and it seems to me like Prince. Prince do that too. So late Prince.
I'm like the Prince of hip hop.
Yeah. he said he was against his labels, his label too.
Yeah. Prince was a rebel. Prince was a fucking rebel.
Mm-hmm.
He stood up for what he stood up for, not just against the labels, creatively too. He only made the shit he wanted to make the way he wanted to make it, even when he was a little kid. I think there's clips of him at 15, 16 on like Soul Train or Bandstand, talking about like he rejected record deals because they wanted someone else to produce his shit, and I was like, there you go, Prince.
In 99, you dropped an unreleased tape also on American Low Life, so it didn't happen too.
That was Priority Records.
Yeah.
I didn't get along very well with record labels.
Yeah, I know. You got songs also like a Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah.
What? Tell us about the song.
That's nothing. It's a song I did real quick.
Yeah.
And Rawkus gave me a check for it. That's all. You know, and then it became famous, and I had to do it for another fucking 20 years of my life. hate performing that fucking song. For 18 years now, record label suck dick, I'm performing for 22 fucking years. You know?
Yeah, and your first album, Ready, it was Die Record.
It's not my first album. That's just the
I say it's the first, official.
Nah, but it's not though. The internet says it is.
Oh, okay.
But it's not. You know, I did quite a few albums before that. And, you know, but the internet. Oh, first album. That ain't my first album. But you know, the other ones don't count, I guess, because lawsuits or something. Like, I put just as much heart and work into the other albums as any of the other ones. So why doesn't the other ones count? Because there was corporate struggle and I fought against the system. So now those albums are obsolete and don't count as official albums.
Is that the reason that they don't talk about these albums?
Yeah, because corporately they weren't released. They weren't
corporate.
They were not released corporately. You get them online, people could hear them.
When you don't
exist,
when you don't pay or get paid, you don't be recognized.
What?
When you don't pay levels or you don't pay the system, you ain't recognized sometimes.
Yeah,
it's crazy. This album, so you got songs with Master Killer, also with some song produced by Jason. Jason is crazy guy, so also crazy producers too. He deals with a lot of things. So tell us about this album.
What, Die Rugged Man Die? Well, I was poor. I was blackballed. I was destroyed from the game. And I made it for $3,500. I didn't get to mix it the way I wanted to. I didn't get to record everything I wanted to. I didn't have total freedom because I was under budget restraints. But I think for a $3,500 budget, while I was watching, you know, my peers all make $1 million albums and $500,000 albums, I think a $3,500 album, I think we sold, you know, I think it generated almost $500,000 worldwide. I think we did pretty great for a $3,500 album, you know.
When you listen to this album, it's Remind, Rakim, Kool G Rap, Grand Poobah, all the Chubb Rock. I know you're a fan of Chubb Rock and all that.
Love Chubb.
So
I love him.
Big Daddy Kane. We feel this album. Music and all that, you can feel this track. Like I think about the sample of Just Ice. You sample.
Yeah, I'm a big Just Ice fan.
Yeah. Question: what's the meaning behind Casanova? It's about loving women. It's about all that.
it was a homage to Grandmaster Caz. It's a homage to Super Lover Nick C and Casanova Rudd. You know, they had that song, Super Casanova, and LaVert. They sampled LaVert too. So, you know, it was just an old school thing. Casanova was old school. That's the reason why, you know, I flipped that, you know. It's a homage to the old school.
Yeah. And also, on the second album, you got a lot of people and you got Tech N9ne. How you meet Tech N9ne? How you be approached by Tech N9ne?
I met Tech N9ne from my friend Richie Abbott, who when he was a kid, he was the publicist at Priority Records, and he was young, 18 or 19. Then he ended up working for Tech, and he's like, "Oh, I'm working with Tech." And I was writing for a lot of magazines, so they said, he said, "Yo, you get Tech in any of these magazines? I'm working for Tech."
Yeah, he was a lot of in front of Butterdog magazine too, Tech N9ne.
Yeah, and then Richie just introduced us, and Tech loved my shit, and I loved Tech's shit, and we just hit it off. You know, that's my brother now.
And you got Chris Calico and two also, and
Calico is an underrated super talent.
Yeah. And even the video is crazy. It's crazy. I know about a lot of people say it was satanic or something. I don't sing a lot.
Well, it's the opposite of satanic.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
The video is a fight against.
Yeah, exactly. It's fight against the government. More about humanity government, in fact.
Say it in the song.
Okay. So you have at times a little fall off with Eminem, but it was more the label.
I had a fallout with him. I don't even know him like that. I met him one time. He was a sweet kid. We got along. That's all I really know.
It was more egos together.
Nah, we never had a fallout. We never had a problem. Yeah. Me and him never had a problem.
Okay.
No, I know I'm better than him, but that's not a problem. Because like I always say, in his mind, he probably says he's better than me, you know.
But
we're just two MCs. That's what MCs think, you know.
I think Eminem have his inspiration from you and from Isham.
Yeah, well, he's got a lot of influences. Yeah. But definitely got some R.A. in there. Yeah. Mm.
So you collaborating with many rappers like Bob Gibbs, Salad X, ODB, Chuck D, also Cool G Rap, and a lot of people. You got also DJ Quick as production. How is what to meet DJ Quick?
Oh man, DJ Quick's a great dude, man, and he's such a knowledgeable cat. That's the best thing about Quick is his knowledge for music. He's a he's a music nerd. Knowledge is deep, man. Mm-hmm. That's the best thing about Quick, man. It's his music knowledge. Yeah.
The bass and all that, he got different style of bass.
No, not just the music making. His history. He's a musical historian, you know? Like, he'll tell you what you sampled on your own record when you don't even know that you sampled that.
Got also with Alchemist, also a song.
Yeah, I know Alchemist since he's a little rugrat motherfucker. I knew Alchemist when he was on the come up, and he did good for himself, you know.
Yeah. Also, you got crazy video clip like Tom Tomb, and also it was a note to Boom Bap, a golden era, like how you dressed and how all that. Can you tell us about this, the video and how about this video?
Which definition of a rap flow?
Yeah, rap flow and Tom Tomb.
Oh yeah, you know, well, Tom Thumb we shot in Berlin, and Tom Thumb the beatboxer, he's a famous beatboxer. He happened to be in Berlin the same time as me. So I didn't have my film crew with me, but I said, let's go shoot, let's do it, let's rock. Mm. So we just shot the video, you know.
Also, you got Uncommon Valor, was more personal track, but it was in reference to your father, who have the Vietnam War. And tell us about this video also. As military.
I like the video so much. Not a fan of the video. I think the verse is a lot stronger than that video. I'm not a fan of the video, but I think the verse is very strong, and it's got a huge following. That verse, like a lot of people think it's like the greatest verse in the history of music. Like, you got to see what some people say about that verse. Yeah. But the video, I'm not a big fan of that video.
For me, one on your video, the last one was very deep, very, you put a lot of confidence. It was about your brothers and sister. It was,
yes,
it was a day. It was so deep video. You can feel it. You can feel from the heart.
It's one of my best best videos ever. Still Get Through the Day is the name of that video, and it's one of the best videos I've ever made. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, because we really feel it was not gimmick. It was all not. It was very personal, very your life.
Yeah.
So
but that video I give to the director. It's a young kid named Doug Quill, and that video's all him. It's all him. I put my emotion into it, but he was a freak of nature directing that. He really, really brought it all to life. He did an amazing job. You know?
Is a crazy situation you grew up with all this past, maybe you're very different from the rest of rappers. Did get an influence of you? What would you have grew up in?
No,
this
all your life is what makes you a better MC. The more life struggle you have, the better artist you usually are. Mm-hmm. So if I lived I go to college and I'm a nice kid, chances are how much passion is going to be in your artwork. Mm. You know, the rich kid painting in this fucking apartment that never been through pain, how good is his painting going to be, you know? So I'm blessed for any struggle that I had, man. You know, I'm everything happened for a reason, and it's all beautiful that it happened. Even though it's tragedy after tragedy after tragedy after death after tragedy after death after tragedy. That was my life. And
you lost
that.
Your sister, your brother, your father, all people.
Of that. My nephew, you know, my sister's baby. Mm. It was, you spend the first 35 years of your life, 30-something years of your life, surrounded by death and disease and poverty and sickness and death and disease, and it gives a man strength. It gives a person a lot of strength and power.
Yeah.
I got a very powerful family. My big sister, my little sister, my nieces, they're all powerful.
You got also Learn Truth with Tariq Kweli. It was a very political track. Also, can you tell us about how you play the video, Ola?
Well, that video was directed by Clay Patrick McBride. Mm-hmm. And he's a great, great photographer in New York City. Mm-hmm. And he's got a beautiful eye, man. One of the most talented human beings I ever met in my life. And he had a small budget. And he came through and did a lot of it as favors. And, you know, it costs money, but not as much as what it should have, you know? So we did really good on that.
You have also a little career different with made movie or screenplay, much, like Bad Biology.
Yeah, wrote and produced it and casted it.
Yeah.
Set that great, anything you could imagine I did on that film. But you know, we didn't have no money again.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, we had money, but not compared to what a movie actually costs. And we shot it on 35mm film.
Mm.
So, and you French people bought it and retitled it the worst title ever. They called it like Sex Fiend or something. I was like, Sex Fiend? Come on, France. It's so uninteresting. That's not an interesting title. You didn't do it yourself, but the. French,
Sex Fiend was also a group, a rap group.
Yeah.
From New Orleans.
Yeah. And then they retitled How Are You? They retitled them. Where's my towels? I didn't ask for much. Go ahead.
So, you was fan of her movie. Yeah. I think you can make a featuring with Brother Lynchon.
If you think we have the same birthday.
Ready?
Yeah, I think on our birthdays we always get tweet like, yo, the two favorite rapper, Brother Lynch Hung and R.A. the Rugger Man, if I'm not mistaken. But I kind of recall that, January 10th. If you want to Google that, see if that's Brother Lynch also, because I think we got the same birthdays.
He's from the West, but he's very fan of East Coast, like Daddy Kane, Ola. He's a really, really racist.
Well, anybody that loves hip-hop loves Big Daddy Kane and Rock.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't love them, you don't love hip-hop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You could think you do, but you don't.
And tell us about the TBA album. What's going on with it?
Oh, I'm in the works with it, man. Yeah. Working my ass off to make it better than the last. I don't ever want to put an album out if it's not better than the one I did before it. So it's a lot of hard work trying to top my last one, which you know, you go in the studio and you say, oh, this is my masterpiece, you know, then you're like, okay, you were very proud of that album, how do you top that one? And you don't leave the studio till you top that one. And it's a little difficult because I'm doing 100-something shows a year, and I just had my little daughter, and I'm being daddy now, and I'm trying to pay the bills and trying to be on the road and trying to, I don't have 5 months to lock myself in the studio and strictly work on that. So what I got to do is I go to New York for 2 weeks, work on the album a little, go back on tour. Then I go see my daughter. Then I go back to New York for a week. So usually it takes
time.
You 4 to 5 months, lock yourself in the studio. I do that 4 to 5 months, a week here, a week there, a week there, a week here, you know, 2 weeks there. So it takes me a little longer, you know.
The best is maybe to go in lab for 1 month and never see anybody.
I ain't doing it in a month. I don't like doing an album in a month. You know why? Because then to me, I like variety in albums. I like albums that took time to kind of put it together. Some great albums were done in a month, but that's not my thing. Because I think a lot of times you're kind of thinking like that one style, and this is the stuff that's bothering you in your mind that particular month, and that's the way you think for 1 month of your fucking life. Where like if you spread it out and you sit back and you come back to it a month or two later, you go, you know what? I like where my head was at, but my head's here. And you get a little bit more versatility of the human being, in my opinion. I'm not saying that knock the album out of a month way is the wrong way. That's the right way for a lot of MCs, but it's not the right one for me. I like different layers of who I am. I don't want 1 month of who I am to be listened to for the next 20 years as that's who I am. Oh, give me your hair. This is a little bit of me. This is a little bit of me. This is the sad me. This is the angry me. This is the politically incorrect me. This is the politically knowledgeable me. This is, you know. Your mind shifts a lot in time rather than 1 month, you know.
What's your opinion about the industry now with a lot of lamestream? You came from an era where rhymes was important. Now you got a lot of weak rhymes in the game. What do you think about that?
No, well, now the game is about celebrity. You know, before it was about who was the best MCs. Now it's about who's banging Kim Kardashian, who's visiting the White House, who's, you know, got Twitter beef with this person, who's got the most followers on YouTube. It's not about a skill level. It's about who's a celebrity. Who hung out with fucking Justin Timberlake last night? Who's on TMZ last week? So that's what makes the non-musical industry reach out to people, because those people don't understand music. So they go, oh, the Twitter numbers are good, or these numbers are good. That's what attracts them, not the music. They don't even listen to the music. If you go in a meeting with a record label, or go in a meeting with a lawyer or an accountant or somebody in the music business, the first thing they do, they go on Google and go, oh shit, your video got 8 million views? First thing they do. Oh, you got 1.2 Twitter followers? Oh boy, that's the first thing they do. They don't go, let me hear the music. They never do that. They don't care about the music.
Right. Yeah, you talk about your influence last time ago, about UTFO, about Houdini.
Yeah, what I was saying is when I said, oh, nobody on the East Coast did it, but no, East Coast started everything, you know, so there's nothing in hip-hop that you could name, really, that they didn't start. I mean, even if they didn't make it a popular thing, East Coast started it in some way or another, because East Coast was doing it for 10 years before anybody, you know, so it's like, or doing it legitimately for 10 years before anyone, but, so the horrorcore, you know, you had Dana Dane doing the Nightmares joint. That was a horror movie rap, and Haunted House rap who was it? Houdini did Haunted House rap? Who did Haunted House
rap? Yeah, we talked about Houdini,
UTF-4. Yeah, but you know that era. But there was a lot. Oh, fuck. Now, see, this is what happens if I do an interview after the show. My brain freezes up, but you know what I'm talking about.
And you see one time that the actual West Coast rappers was more dope than East Coast actual rappers.
I said in 2015.
I think about now. Because the East Coast rappers, actually the young East Coast rappers, try to copy the South, down South. But they copy weak for me. they don't even know the real down South.
No, what the problem is with New York these days is there's not enough originators. And New York are the originators. So all New York had to be New York. And keep being New York. And they would have conquered again. What comes around goes around. But what happened was, when New York radio stopped playing New York music, the New York youth started trying to duplicate all these sounds that wasn't done by the originators. So what are you doing? And now we got a bunch of, you know, copycat, want to try to sound like they're from different places, and not too many originators. So, meanwhile, we are the originators. New York originated it all, everything. So, it's a tough
thing. Yeah. But in the down south, you got UGK who start to gamble funk, or so Mike Dean, or, you know.
I don't know what it is. What is gamble funk?
Gamble funk, it was created by Mike Dean. Mike Dean,
yeah, but
from Buffalo.
What is gamble funk?
So gamble funk, it's a style.
What year is it?
Oh, yeah.
And what is the rap
88,
like?
88.
Yeah, okay. If you showed me a rap. Of
like
it,
UGK.
Oh, like the double time
Underground Kings.
What is it? What did they do exactly? I mean, they might have taken it to another level, but what did they do?
No, they made a style of sound. It's a Rap-A-Lot sound, the earlier sound of Rap-A-Lot.
Well, I'd have to listen to it, because like people go, oh, the double time things from South, and I listen to Super Lover C and Casanova Rudd on Pump It Back, and they're like, girls, I'm bumping up, and I was like, yo, that's that before that too.
Yeah.
I don't know what sound you're talking about on the UGK thing, so I'm not gonna take nothing away from them. But I don't know, I'd have to listen. And if you showed me the record you're talking about, I'm pretty sure I could find a record from New York that was doing, maybe not to that level, but where the influence might have come from, whether it's Slick Rick flow even.
Yeah.
Then you take something like Ice-T and N.W.A., that was all done in New York first. Schoolie D and Just Ice. Schoolie D's Philadelphia, but done in the East Coast first, all of it.
No. I don't bring it up. I just say,
and that's no disrespect to anywhere else, but that's just history.
Yeah.
I hate when they go, oh, that's the New York guys. New York is your music. Mm. That's where it came from. Don't take it away from that. That's history.
But the difference with Europe and America, it's America, you got every regional style. I think about the go-go DC style, they got the own style, you got the New York style, you got the Midwest style,
but
Kansas City style.
Yeah, but the go-go style.
Yeah, of course, you got Barry Sancho, Brown, all that.
Yeah, but what's the rap? What's the rap?
The rap, you got world sound of rap.
But what's the rhyming?
Yeah,
I know what go-go sound is, I know that whole sound, you know, with the musical sound.
Live show, live.
But what's the rap? What's the rapper or MC that brought it to the table from that era? Mm. What is the MC? Because tell me that, and then
we got Rare Essence, like as rappers.
Who?
Rare Essence. It was from DC.
What year is that?
Which was in the 80s.
Yeah, but what year?
Yeah.
And what was their rap style? What was they rapping like?
I'd have to listen
to the rap.
Mm. You got the Roots. It was like the Roots. You know, they got the DC style.
A live band.
Yeah.
So what do you mean? It's like the Roots.
I mean, it's just this kind of style music, you know. This kind of style music of live instruments, all that.
Yeah, but that was done in Stetsasonic.
Yeah, but in New York,
and that was done with Blowfly.
Blowfly. So, but what I would say, it's you got in America a lot of typical sound, regional sound.
What sound?
Regional sound. You got the Bay Area, you got the Bob sound, you got
That happened years later. That happened years after.
Yeah.
But who was rapping? What was every single person rapping like in 1980?
89.
What was everybody rapping like in 79? What was everybody rapping like in 81, 82, 83, 84? So they go, oh, then it's regional. Yeah, of course, anything's going to fucking STD will turn fucking regional. We'll turn world.
You got GT Money of Poison Clown. Poison Clown.
Yeah, Poison Clown. Yeah.
Poison Clown was earlier.
But who was his influences?
Yeah. Of course, New York is a lot of influence. Like in New Orleans, you got Maya X, who sounds, who got
But that's years later.
She has a group called New York INC. So in 1984, so they sound.
Who? What record did they put out? Where? Who was playing it?
I talk about New York INC. It's an old group of New Orleans with Manny Fresh, all that. But they were there in 1984.
And what did it sound like? Who would
it sound
like? Like
it sounded like East Coast, yes.
It sounded like East Coast at this time. I didn't even need to have to hear it to know it, because the only way rap sounded was like East Coast. That's the only sound of rap at that time.
At that time, yes. At
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. 10 years later,
then
it spread throughout the world and everyone tried to do their interpretation of it, but it all came from one place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what I would say is, you have reason.
Right?
You got Kilo Ailey, you've seen HEL, all that.
Who?
Kilo Ailey.
What year is that though?
It's 1999.
That's after the MTV Raps came out.
Yeah.
That's what the problem with what they're doing now is. They try to erase the first 10 years of hip hop and pretend like it started in fucking 1985. Mm. No, it was already out for 10 years. You know, or it started in 1989 when Yo MTV Raps came on. No, it was out already.
So the first rappers was Rob Brown.
Who?
Rob Brown. He was a Panther Apache rapper. In the 70s. Rob Brown.
H. Rap Brown from the.
So it was in late 70s.
That's all argued. That's all argued because some people say here
last
comes
poets. Hold on.
Yeah, some people say the last poets, but some people say way before that. They say Pygmy. Mm. Pygmy in the 60s did Here Comes the Judge. Mm. And some people go, oh, that's the first rap record. It's always debated with. They said comedians. Mm. Listen to what Daddy-O said. Comedians. Was rapping like the black comedians, you know, Pygmy and Moms Mabley and that whole thing. But Pygmy made a record called Here Comes the Judge, and he's rapping over a fucking drum. Listen to it, 1967.
Mm.
But we don't know. But they said that's not hip hop culture. That's somebody doing a rap. So it's all of that is debate. Everything's debate. Everything's debate.
I think a lot of young people lost the culture, so they don't know about hip hop, about what it is. That's a problem now because it's a lack of knowledge. So knowledge is important for.
Yeah, well,
for
a lot of people don't want to know what it is. They don't care. A lot of kids don't care or want to know what it is. So that is what it is. You know, and I kind of liked it. When I came up, it was the same shit. Mad people didn't want to give a fuck about rap music. Rap was like the evil stepchild that nobody wanted a part of. They didn't want to give it awards. They didn't want it on the pop channels. That was a good time for rap, actually, because that's when the MCs were the hungriest. When motherfuckers didn't care about the craft and the streets cared about it, that's when all the best music came. Before all the corporations said, oh, we could put this in Disney movies and make billions of dollars on the radio off of it, it was pure. So I like when people didn't give a fuck about the culture except for the culture itself. But we're way past that now.
The problem is the industry. It's a lamestream industry for me. Yeah, skinny jeans, all that. What do you think about all that young thug and all this shit? What's your point about?
What?
About young thug, all that, all this
Well, the products of society. Mm. You know, society says, I like that shit.
Mm.
You know, and I like what the radio's feeding me. I like what the magazines are feeding me. I'm gonna go for it. Society follows what they're told. And when there's a lot of money involved, it's not about a culture or a craft or who's the best anymore. And it's not just hip-hop. It's singing, it's songwriting, it's record making. They simplified it, dumbed it down. So all 10 records on the radio sound like the same fucking record. And if you want to hit, you need to be this artist and you need to make a song that sounds similar to this song. That matches that on the radio so we could put into rotation, and then you still need a radio campaign, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I feel you. Like you got the Migos and all that, Migos flow, you said change the Loud and Famous flow, you know, Loud and Famous of 26 Mafia, so late on the Famous. Is he takes his flow, for example, so they take a culture for me, for. What do you think about the Jugalos and all that? Jugalos?
What?
The ICP in Second Barcy
Juggalos.
What do you think about?
Well, you know, when Juggalos first started coming on the scene and it was everybody wearing clown makeup, I was like, man, this shit is fucking corny. That ain't hip hop. And then I started doing shows, and hip hop is a culture of people loving music and enjoying themselves. So I don't do too many Juggalo shows, but when I'm in the Midwest and I come out and there's hundreds of weirdo kids dressed all fucking funky and crazy, and they're having this amazing time. And MCs are putting on a show for that crowd. It's still a hip hop event because they're rocking hip hop music to a crowd of people. So, I think who's the judge? You know, who's the judge? You know, like people at, you know.
I think the first Detroit, like House of Crazy, is all. I think a lot of Detroit rappers start with this hard rock shit, like Isham, all that. They grab the guys, get be influenced by them.
I'm not sure about that at all. I'm really not sure about that. I mean, I'll talk to Prince Paul and I'll ask him. I knew Poetic from Grave Diggers. Mm-hmm. He was from Long Island. I knew him personally. I mean, I'm not sure if they knew who that was. I don't even think Prince Paul and RZA knew who Gangsta Nip was.
Yeah.
I don't think they knew who these people were.
Gangsta Nip made Our Call in 83, 84.
I don't know about that, though.
Gangsta Nip, yeah.
I don't know about that, though. Show me the record.
It's regional.
What?
It was regional.
Yeah, show it to me. I don't
like
know.
Like Carino, Point Blank, all that.
Yeah, I know what Point Blank and them guys, but 83, I don't think that's accurate.
They was in 86, 85. This time.
I thought you said 83.
Yes, yeah, it was weapon at this time. Yes.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm trying to say is when the records dropped.
Yeah.
So you're saying people are influenced by records they never heard. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
like records, people doing regional songs that never came out. This is before the internet, man.
Yeah.
So nobody got to hear some demo tape from 83.
Yeah.
So
the Isham tapes was around all USA.
Well,
like the red tapes.
So hey, when you were doing your project, were you influenced by this? They would say yes in a heartbeat. They're real like that. Like if you ask me if so and so influenced me, I'll go yes or no if it did. But I don't know if it's accurate. I don't know how many New York MCs or Long Island producers were listening to Detroit in 1992. I don't know.
Detroit Most Wanted was the first group of Detroit.
What?
Detroit Most Wanted.
Yeah, no, but what I'm trying to say is the horrorcore thing, you're saying the Grave Diggers
took
from Detroit, I don't know if that's accurate.
I don't know
if they listen to that.
You got also Triple Six Mafia, Memphis Sound.
Okay, but that doesn't mean that motherfuckers was nerding out like you and listening to it.
Yeah.
Where would they have heard it?
I understand.
No, I'm asking you though, where would they have heard it? If you were in New York, it's a different world.
Yeah, because there was no internet at this time.
In 1990, where were dudes listening to this music?
Not a lot of people.
Who in New York was bumping these rare ass tapes that weren't in New York? They wasn't playing it on our radio stations. All the hip hop we got, they had the Rap Attack, they had Kiss FM, WBLS, and they played shit.
Yeah,
we taped that shit. That was in the 80s. Then UMTV Raps came out, and we fuck with that. But don't rewrite history by just because something was out before it, that means it influenced something. That's not always true. You know, that's not always true. You can try to write a puzzle of what came first or what this, that. But in my honesty, no disrespect, but in 88, 89, I knew Kool G Rap and De La Soul and Big Daddy Kane and Terrace One and Public Enemy. I didn't know any of the Detroit stuff. Not one. I couldn't have named one artist from Detroit in 1991. Couldn't name one artist from Detroit. And that's no disrespect to them. I'm just saying that that's
me. There was no internet.
Now Prince Paul might be a different story. And I'll call him, I'll ask him. But it might be a different story. Where I believe Paul probably heard more about that stuff years later, like from guys like you that are like, well, what about this? When he did Grave Diggers, I think he had his little thing and he did what he did with RZA, you know? But honestly, I was rapping in cyphers with Too Poetic from Grave Diggers, and if anything, I would say I was a bigger influence on Too Poetic than the guys you're naming from Detroit, and vice versa. Me and Poetic were boys, you know? Poetic ran back to Prince Paul and was like, yo, you gotta meet R.A. the Rugged Man. That dude, that's that dude from Long Island, you know, and Paul told me that story too. Poetic is the way I heard of you. He came running up to me telling me about you. So you know, I don't know. I think you gotta, you can't rewrite history just because you like the timetable piece. And I'm not saying you're wrong either, because I'm not them. I could just say that myself. You know what I mean? I learned about Gangsta Nip in about 93.
Yeah.
And then they
the South Cycle.
Yeah, South Park Cycle.
It was produced by a New York DJ.
I don't know about that, but it's because I have a crazy friend
named Viciously from New York.
I have a crazy friend named Vinny Beretta. Mm. And he was obsessed with Nip. And Nip said left field retarded wild shit. Mm. And he was Nip's biggest fan because he'd say like it wasn't horrorcore cliche where it was like, oh, I'll chop your head off, and it was like more like migraine headaches made me sleep in a toaster. Like, what the fuck did that mean, Nip? Or he'd say, I won't stop whooping your ass till your motherfucking blood bleeds. Like, that was like, my boy would tell me Nip lyrics, and I'd be like, yo, that dude's on some crazy shit, you know? Insects and shit, like horror movies. I think horror rap is corny when it's a cliche, like bloody acts and you know, all of that shit. We had fun, but we took it and spun the cliches to make them fun, not make it like horror movies.
Yeah, him it was more like 26 Mafia, Mystic Stars, or all that.
Nip was just a fucking maniac, and you could tell it by his lyrics.
I know him. He's crazy. He's a crazy guy.
He's still crazy?
Yeah.
You can tell by his lyrics.
I'm in contact with him, yeah.
But he's
very underrated. Underrated rapper, actually.
He's a lunatic, man. Yeah, he's a lunatic. I could tell it by the raps. There's no acting there. He's just...
I see you could make a featuring with him, maybe.
Where does he live now? What's he up to?
Houston.
He's still there?
Yeah, he's still there. But now it's more. He's more in a black power, all that, you know. He should return with Camino shit.
Okay.
And if you have your three favorite MCs,
all time.
Yeah.
It depends what week it is. I change it up all the time. Like I love
in the 80s.
No, of all time.
Oh.
I love Kool G Rap.
Yeah.
Because of his lyricism, his flows, the way he changed, the way every single person rapped after him. I love Grand Poobah because he had fun with it. He flowed, he bounced, he was lyrical, he was fun, he had personality. He was just the whole package. And, you know, even on the same tip, take an MC like Heavy D, who... was an all-around entertainer, put on an incredible show, had a great voice, had, you know, enunciation on the microphone, his clarity, and, you know, was just made great records, where, like, MCs lacked that. Heavy D made great, great records, and was a superstar, you know, and was still an MC. So there's so many great MCs in history, you know?
You have three producers.
Marley Marl, Teddy Riley, and Prince.
You have a last message to say? A last message to say?
Or last message? Nah. I'm good. This is a long interview.
It was a scrunch of you.
Cunt. Cunt. Mm. Oh, cunt.
Yo, the notorious B.I.G. with the crustified dips.
Big Ben ripped the twat. Down to the asshole. Ain't no dick like the one I got. Big Rip the twat in the basement of weed spots. Even vacant lots. Bitches know the steed on the P-U-S-S-Y. You suggest I take it out the anal. Fucking big is fatal. Dangerous. You should see me swing the jimmy. And when the henny's in me, I'm fucking green bitches like Kirk when the cum spurts. I'm out, bitch. You know what I'm about, bitch. Hit them, quit them, forget them. Fist fuck them, dump them in the truck and find another dick that lick dick to the tip down to the asshole. Lips red like Tabasco. A little rascal. Call me Chubsy Upsy or Stiney. Let me fuck you from behind, see the ass shake, big break holes, torsos. Gotta go, see your groupies at my next show. Big Rip the twat.
I rip your cunt down with
your
boots.
Asshole. Big Rip the twat.
I rip your guns out with spoons. Blood, I'm moving over, it's the cunt renaissance, the cunt renaissance. So you could lick the shit off my dick after I fuck you in the asses. I was born in special ed classes. I'm about to do it, OJ Simpson on them. Think they think they slip when they be flipping. When I put my dick in, they be shitting. I rip your cuts out with spoons. I make you feel pain like virgins on honeymoons. I make ill tunes. The hairy fat slob, I glorify gluttony. But ugly, only ugly bitches be fucking me. Now can you dig it, just work it, baby? In association with dirty, crusty asses. I can't live any matter when I get spattered. Makes the blood out my bleeding ulcers splatter from my bladder. Pregnant bitch, you get kicked in the belly. So fuck all them hookers who had beef with Arcanelli. Check the studios, it's the rockin' real.
Big rip the twat.
I rip your guts out with spoons.
Big rip the twat.
I rip your guts out with spoons.
Big rip the twat.
I rip your guts out with spoons.
Big rip the twat.
I rip your guts out with spoons.
Check it out. Check it out.
You're a scumbag.
Come on.
R.A. Rugged Man.
When I was young, I was a loser. Loser.
That there's Rugged Man.
The lowest. The loser.
R.A.
Scumbag.
Rugged Man.
When I was young, I was a loser. Loser.
That there's Rugged Man.
The lowest. The
yo. Loser. Do I lack a massive hit? Am I a backpack and prick? Am I a rap maverick or just a fat sack of shit? Nothing that the world would ever give to me but negativity. The industry was only interested in getting rid of me. My family snort heroin and smoke pipes. Criminals, biker gangs, drug addicts, low life. Agent Orange, homicide, robberies. My life makes Shakespeare tragedies look like Adam Sandler comedies. I need to meditate or medicate. My mental state is never fake. I keep the dead awake, but can I get a break? Controversial, outspoken, hip-hop Frank Zappa. Bad breath, body odor, overweight, stank rapper. I misbehaved a bit, the industry was afraid of it. I couldn't take a shit without lawyers litigating it.
He's a slob.
He's obnoxious.
He's a misogynist.
He hates women. This shit is toxic.
Oh, bitch, stop it. I hope your pop get his wallet picked by a pickpocket and your fat mother drown in the puddle of pig vomit. All I cared about was trying to get inside vagina lips and biting tits. I was unstable, fighting, having violent fits. A point I might have missed. More irritating than psoriasis is at the height of this. They tried to hire a psychiatrist. My career fell apart. Taught me how to be humble. Watched a $1.8 million deal crumble.
R.A. Rugged Man.
When I was young, I was a loser. Loser.
That there's Rugged Man.
The lowest. The loser.
The
motherfucking bullshit I've been through. If a loser like me could do it, so could you. The loser.
Since my daddy pulled it out and my mama's drawers dropped, I came out the pussy losing. I was a born flop, flim flammed, I've been banned, I've been panned, I've been kicked like a tin can, a tin man standing in quicksand. Honey sukiyaki, days of who's Illuminati, 90s New York City, Rudy Giuliani, watch me every day, life just ain't working. Contemplate a bullet through my head, my brain on the wall squirting. Groupies say Rugged Man is so adorable. I'm like I'm wretched and I'm gross and worse than a Trump deplorable. I'm over emotional, broken, hopeless and done. In the mirror, suicidal and holding a loaded. Now snap out of it, don't let them win, I shall overcome. I was born to be the king of underground, the chosen one. So I turned it all around and nobody can stop the rise. I make the songs I wanna make and I don't ever compromise. I'm a well-known legend, I'm a king of the stage. An analog fella reigning in the digital age. And after all the motherfucking bullshit I've been through, if a scumbag like me could do it, then so could you.
You're a scumbag.
R.A. Rugged Man.
When I was young, I was a loser.
That there's Rugged Man.
The lowest. The loser.
After
all the bullshit shit I've been through. After all the motherfucking bullshit I've been through. If a loser like me could do it, then so could you.
About to drown, headed down from the eastbound town. Found the underground crown. Went from down and out clown to having cloud world renowned. Pounding pussy by the pound.
After all that, and you're still rapping about pussy.
Alright, here's a little
knowledge that I give to the youth. When your dreams seem impossible, it's not, I'm the proof. I lived the life I wanted, I kept pursuing my passion. They called me a no career having loser has been. And I toured the world and made millions off of rapping. They said I'd never be successful, but it happened. The purple people eat a meat, the witch doctor, Big Five, a blood sport, kickboxer, fist drop, your gymkata. Some of your morals maybe gotta be missing when you come from a broken family that's poverty stricken. So far as the money, when I'm dead, it's gone. But the music that I make for my fans will live on. Go.
Rugged man, I was young, I was a loser. Loser, that there's rugged man. The loser. If a loser like me could do it, then so could you. Now they call me legend. Look,
the legend.
Now they call me legend. Look, the legend. Now they call me legend. Look, the legend. Legendary,
legendary, legendary.
Loser,
loser, loser, loser, loser, loser.
We're all wondering how to believe.
Who are we supposed to believe in?
I'm wondering about the horrors in the world that we witness, and what's the purpose of our babies being born into sickness. My cold world of stalactites and spikes of icicles, in a house of disease and handicapped blind cripples. I watched half my family die, the shit we've been through. I lost my brother, my sister, my cousin, my nephew. I watched the hearse come when my sister lost the first son. The tragedies in life are the lessons that we learn from. Had a school crush, she hit up his Facebook. She finally got the guts. To her surprise, he replied and he asked to meet up. And he was fast, hands all on her, she couldn't keep up. She said, slow down. He said, no way, it's about to go down. Jenny tried to push him off, he shoved her to the ground. She tried to bite him and fight him with nowhere to run hide. He overpowered her and pounded and thrusted inside, busted inside. Tonight a piece of Jennifer died. When he was done, she walked away as he stumbled and cried. Don't want the papers to name her, a neighborhood to shame her. She didn't tell her parents, she was scared that they would blame her. A month went by, depression and self-hatred. Seeing flashbacks of being forcefully penetrated. The face of the rapist in the brain, she can't take it. Looking through a drawer for a razor blade, but not to shave with. Her blood leaked down the sink faucet. Her life ended, still the rape was never reported. That's why the rapist coward was never outed. In fact, he remained free and he even bragged about it. Told his friends about his hot fling with this hot thing around town. He was the man, the school jock, prom king, the nerve with him. Women in town, they worshipped him. The worst part is that Jenny was only his first victim. Pill popping, unapologetic, and the neighborhoods are infested. The heroin epidemic, and little Eric started cutting classes. And then the heroin entered his bloodstream through his nasal passage. And every time his mom looked inside his eyes, she would cry. Beady eye, pupils small, nose runny, mouth dry. Picking scabs off his body every day, getting high. Glory of the euphoria, nausea when it's missing. No resisting the itching for a fixing up the addiction. His mama looking through his baby pictures and reminiscing. So his mom got him rehab, it got him sober. He went back to high school trying to get his diploma. It appeared this nightmare might be finally over. Then he sniffed a bad batch and he fell into a coma. 6 months in a vegetative state, no closure. Complications in his lungs, then he died from pneumonia. Mommy's baby boy, born innocent and wholesome. Used to change his diapers and breastfeed him and hold him. She reminisced of Little League when Eric hit a home run. Why should a mother have to live to bury her own son? I'm wondering.
We're all wondering how to believe.